everyone, and welcome to From Tip to Tail, a podcast dedicated to animal welfare. This podcast is sponsored by Cuddly. Cuddly is the only crowdfunding platform built specifically for animal welfare organizations worldwide. I'm Bridget.
And I'm Sydney. We've spent years working with animal rescues and have seen such amazing innovation, strength, and heart.
Having this personal connection with rescuers has made us more informed, grateful, and inspired. We hope by giving you an inside look, you will be too.
Today, we're going to be talking with Marla of the Riley Farm Rescue, whose mission is to rescue suffering farm animals and provide them with the quality and loving home they deserve through rehabilitation and long-term care. The Riley Farm Rescue brings awareness to the neglect and cruelty farm animals experience through education, special events, and by living and promoting a vegan and cruelty-free lifestyle. We're so excited, so let's go ahead and get started.
Hi there, Marla. How are you?
Good. How are you today?
So wonderful. Super great. Spring has sprung around here. How are things where you are?
Yes, actually, it's 71 degrees today, which is a huge difference from just a few days ago where it was 40.
Oh my gosh. What a leap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's insane. I feel like it just does that, right? Like it just makes that rapid switch and then suddenly you look down and you're like, man, I'm so pale. So we're super excited to get into this. I mean, love like farm life, farm rescue, all of that. So we're really excited to get into this. Rolling back the clock though, wondering, did you grow up on a farm? Is this like, has this always been your reality, or how did you really get into farm rescue?
No, actually, I had an interesting childhood. My dad was an animal behaviorist and studied reptiles. So we had a house full of reptiles all the time. So always had a love for animals. My first job was in a pet store. Not that I like pet stores now, but first job was in a pet store, and I would take home all the animals that were not able to be sold due to injuries or deformities. So I was kind of rescuing even as a young teenager without even really realizing it. And then I just sort of fell into this. I did not have a plan to start a sanctuary at all. I had gotten chickens like many people do for eggs, and then realized that they had personalities of their own and decided I needed to stop eating meat. I felt really odd about that once I started to really connect with them. And then decided to go to a live auction one day and was pretty horrified by what I saw. So I went vegan that day and started rescuing small animals, birds, mostly roosters, especially in ducks, and just sort of started it rescuing, you know, in my backyard, not really planning to start a nonprofit. But my daughter had suggested we post about it and people just really engaged. So we kept going. And then we ended up getting our nonprofit and 501c3 in June of 2017. And it just kind of took off from there. And here we are today on a 26-acre farm with 197 animals. So it just sort of happened very fast and not really with a plan.
That is so many animals. How many people do you have working that farm? That's insane.
All volunteer based. We don't have any paid employees. So it's really just an awesome community that we've built. I have a barn manager that does live on site. So I live off site. I have my family, so they really wanted more privacy. So I live about 5 minutes from here, and I still work full time, multiple different jobs. I'm a nurse. So really, I couldn't do this without the help of all of our Riley family community.
That's amazing. And I can't believe you're still a nurse. I mean, certainly that even sounds like more than a full-time job on its own, and then to add kids into that. And then all of this, you must be like on borrowed time all the time.
Yeah, always. Never. I mean, this is a little bit of a rest for me to be sitting down.
Right. Well, and you said you started, so initially when you kind of began taking in animals, you said you started off small. I'm wondering, when did you kind of make, I don't know if you'd consider like, I guess like goats or horses or pigs, whatever would be the bigger animals, but when did you make that jump?
I believe it was the beginning of the year, around February of 2018, it was February of 2017. So it was before we got our nonprofit or anything. I had gotten a call from a farmer that had two small goats, Nigerian dwarfs, they're small, that needed to be bottle fed, and he was not interested in doing that. So I had taken them in.
How precious. I'm like picturing just like giving milk to baby goats.
Yeah, it was a great experience. Around the clock, you know, every 4 hours, like you would with a baby. So it was definitely interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering too, I mean, so with all these different animals and then with your medical background, I mean, have those two been able to like kind of feed into each other? I mean, obviously not the animals into your medical practice, but the other way around. I'm wondering, because I've heard from some of our other sanctuaries and rescues that they find that some of these like farm animals, they kind of have a similar vibe like medically to humans a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I'm always thankful that I was an ICU nurse for years before I went into management. So I'm very fortunate to have that critical care background because I definitely pick up on things, I think, a lot sooner than some people might, just because I'm used to watching for, you know, somebody, a human crashing. So it's very apparent to me when something's not right and what might be going on with an animal. They are similar. And I've been able to use a lot of my medical skills. I mean, I do all kinds of treatments on my own and injections and IV therapy. And I've had a goat on TPN, which is total parenteral nutrition, which is nutrition through the IV using an IV pump, which normally that would need to be done inpatient. But because I have a very good relationship with my vet and he knows that I have a strong critical care background, I'm able to do a lot of that from the farm, which has been great.
That's so wonderful. I mean, even just like the ICU part of that, I mean, I feel like it's something that's so important in the world of rescue because like at any given moment, it feels like something really dire could happen. And so being able to be that quick on your feet and not panic, because I know some of us have have very real fight or flight instincts. So that's wonderful that yours is to like dig your heels in and really get into it. That's amazing. I know you said too, you said that it was like these chickens and their personalities that inspired you to become vegan. I mean, I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit more of that about that, because I know vegan sounds really intense to a lot of people and feels like a big leap, but I'm wondering if there was some sort of like baby steps that you took that you felt like made it a lot easier and some of the rationale, because I know people choose the vegan lifestyle for a few different reasons. And so wondering if you can touch on those.
Sure. I was vegetarian first for a few years before I went vegan, and mainly because I had a real hard time with not wanting to give up dairy. You know, with cheese was my favorite food. I didn't have the biggest, you know, very hard time giving up meat. It was more cheese. And so I always tell people, you know, because my way of helping somebody become vegan, it's not by shaming them. I mean, most of us were meat eaters and dairy eaters our entire life. That's what we're raised to do. So, you know, treating someone poorly just because they're still doing what is normal for them is not going to have helped them join our mission. So I always try to just talk about, you know, cut one thing out, cut one day eat vegan, try and see how it goes. And once you're kind of in there and you're finding all the different options, it becomes a lot less scary. There's definitely many more options. It seems like to me every day new products coming out, which is just wonderful. I do always suggest that someone, unless they're very committed, go vegetarian first, just so they can kind of get one step under their belt and then move on to the next. For me, it was easy only because to go vegan because I had went to the auction and I had been faced with all these things that I may have thought about in the back of my mind, but had never seen firsthand. And so seeing it firsthand, I could no longer ignore it. It was in my face right there, and I was contributing to it. So that night, I mean, that day, you know, whatever, I don't remember what I ate that day, but once leaving the auction, I never ate anything knowingly, because of course, there's going to be times where you realize you were incorrect about something. That was it. That was it for me. That's all I needed, was to be faced with that in front of my face and saying, well, I'm here to, you know, save animals and speak up for them. And I can't do that without being vegan. That's, you know, hypocritical. And just knowing more and seeing the dairy industry and the egg industry in front of my face is very, I guess when I saw it, I wasn't shocked, but just seeing it firsthand, you know, it was just that.
So I was actually talking to Bridget about this before. When someone, I guess, is taking those baby steps, you know, into vegetarianism or into veganism. And I'm wondering this because I tend to see this at the store a lot. You see, you know, with eggs, you see pasture raised and you see like organic and things like that. Are there responsible decisions while you're taking those baby steps? Are there responsible like products that you can buy that would make me or maybe be a little bit more like conscious towards, you know, veganism and sort of that issue that happens in the, you know, animal industry?
Unfortunately, not in the supermarket, there wouldn't be. But if you bought eggs from a neighbor that loves their chickens, of course, that's better than a factory farm, you know, obviously. If you bought beef from somebody that you know that sells beef and you see how their cows are taken care of, then obviously their life might have been better. But I really stand strongly behind there is no humane slaughter. It doesn't exist. They are scared. They have emotions. They watch as they're in a line going up to them having the next turn. They are scared. So regardless, you know, if they have a great life before, their final moments are not great. And we don't need animal products. There's so much out there now and it's a healthier way. There's so many studies of, you know, all the diseases and things that come from animal products and the environment too. There's that. I mean, some people don't really care. I just want to do it for the animals. I love the environment also. And I'm not a healthy vegan eater either. I eat a lot of fried food. I love vegan junk food. So people always say to me, oh my gosh, you must be so healthy. I'm like, no, probably not. Because I'm always on the go. So I do a lot of like fried processed vegan food, but I mean, you definitely can eat very healthy vegan if you're on it for that reason too.
Oh my gosh. I think that's so true. I know my family members are all vegan and I was of the same mindset. I'm like, man, quarantine must have been amazing for you. You must have really dug into so many beautiful recipes and like done all these things. And they're like, no, it's been like a lot of vegan, like mac and cheese. So it's like, I think there is that misconception too. It's like, there's definitely junk food and it's definitely delicious. So.
Right. And that's what I try. That's what I try to tell people when they say, well, what do you eat? Salad all the time. I couldn't eat salad all the time. And I'm just like, actually, I probably don't even eat salad once a week. So I really try to share like the awesome, more comfort foods with people that are thinking about it, because that's the thing that really shocks them. You know, if they try a Beyond Burger off the grill and then we put some BioLife cheddar cheese on it, they're like, wow, this is vegan. I can do this. Because I think the misconception is that all vegan food is like boring or healthy. And not everybody wants to eat boring and healthy all the time, maybe sometimes or most of the time, but they want to be able to have that option to indulge. And you definitely can still do that.
Oh yeah. I mean, I always think back to like my first impression of veganism was like from Lisa Simpson on The Simpsons. And they're like, there's like some character who is like, I'm a fourth stage vegan. I don't eat anything with a shadow. And it's like goofy cartoon aspect of like that's not even possible to sustain your life that way. No. So I love what you're saying too about baby steps. Cause I know it feels overwhelming to be like, and this radical life change, but like starting with one meal, starting with giving up one thing, and then working your way as you like assimilate and you kind of like ingrain it into your lifestyle a little bit more. And like some people never fully transition, but at least you're making a little progress.
Right. And spending time with animals. I have so many volunteers that came to us that were not vegan, not vegetarian at all. And I never push my ideals on anybody. You know, that's to me, I wouldn't want someone to come and push their ideals on me. 5 questions I will ask. So I try to treat people the same way, especially volunteers. They're volunteering their time. So they come and there's so many that have become vegan just from being in this environment with the animals, making those connections. And then also being around a very friendly bunch of vegans, because all of our family here that is vegan are the very friendly and understanding, warm vegans. There are definitely some vegans that are very judgmental, and I guess maybe that has its place somewhere, but it's not on the farm. We really try to be open to everybody, and we've built a very awesome community. Anytime anybody is ever new, all they can say is, I just can't believe how nice and welcoming everybody is and so friendly. So we really strive to stay that way. And that turns people vegan and has people going home thinking. I had done a news story with a local news channel about a month ago or so, and the anchor is still emailing me videos of pigs not being slaughtered, but how they're kept before. And he's just like, do you know this is going on? I said, of course I know this is going on. So just spending some time here, he's starting to look and he's starting to think. I think that's the most powerful tool, is having somebody come to their own realization and do their own thinking. It's like the number one. I was in sales, medical sales, for a long time before I gave up my career. And that was like one of the big sales techniques, is you need to let the customer come to their own decision that they need the product. So it's the same kind of thing. That's what makes people change, is them thinking that, okay, coming to their own conclusion.
Totally. And I think the visual aspect makes such a big difference too. I mean, I know we spoke with a horse rescue, and they were talking about live horse auctions. And you have this idea in your head, right? But then when I'm like looking over these videos and seeing these animals, it is a little bit shocking. So I'm wondering how, if you can maybe describe a little bit of like the live auctions that you've seen, because horses, they are like farm animals. But I also think it must be just a whole different level with like animals for consumption.
Mm-hmm. I've been to all kinds of auctions. And unfortunately, the horse auctions are also, a majority of those horses are being loaded on trucks and getting shipped to Mexico or Canada for slaughter. So those auctions are just as horrendous. It's not people there just looking to buy a new nice horse. I go to the big horse auction with other rescue founders. We do that. We're actually going in April. We go with a bunch of rescues and we try to do what we can do while we're there. But they're mostly very broken down horses that have been used and worked their whole lives. A lot of different religions use them. And that's just in their religion. And then when they can't work anymore, they send them there. So it's pretty horrific to see, with the horses for sure. And then obviously the animals that are there for consumption, you know, that majority of them are either going to be used for breeding if they're lucky, or, you know, going right to slaughter. So it is awful, because they're holding animals up, you know, holding a birds up by their wings. That's obviously doesn't seem comfortable, and the birds are screaming. And they're just, people are just bidding on them like they're a commodity. And, you know, the goats and the sheep, they're terrified. They get sent out into the ring by themselves, and there's all these people yelling and screaming. It's just awful. I don't enjoy going. I go a couple times a year to pull a few so they don't end up going to slaughter. But it really, I always remember certain faces, you know, because obviously we can't save everybody. And it's just something that will never, never leave me.
Yeah. I mean, so on that note, it's so startling and it's so shocking. And I would encourage anyone who hasn't at least seen a video of these live auctions, it is a little bit shocking to see like human beings acting this way. But turning back to Riley Farm, is that where you say you cull a couple of times a year. So how are animals typically coming to Riley Farm?
It feels like since COVID, it's all been hoarding cases. It's just been out of hand with the hoarding cases. That's basically, I think, all we've taken in, except going, did we go to an auction? Yeah, we went to an auction in around Thanksgiving time. They usually go to rescue some turkey. And yes, so it's basically this past year been hoarding. situations where people, you know, gotten out of control with their animals. They can't take care of them anymore. They can't feed them. Nobody was spayed and neutered. And here we end up with, there was a case in North Carolina with 87 and nobody was spayed or neutered. We were able to, between sanctuaries all across the U.S., place all 87 pigs. That was wonderful. We took a mom and her four babies and then a pregnant mom. They're all doing well. And it just, you know, the hoarding cases are difficult because there's always a lot of dead animals on the scene. I did not go to this particular one in New Jersey, but I was in close contact with other sanctuaries that were there. And it's just awful what they have to witness and getting all the animals that are out alive. But that's what it's been, is mostly hoarding. And then I mean, we always get calls and emails every day requesting, you know, to take animals in, owner surrender situation, which I really try to avoid because they could easily become a shelter if I was taking animals in every day. And we don't adopt out. So someone comes to us, they're staying with us. So we have to reserve our space for those that are really in immediate danger.
Now, that was my question. I was going to ask if you did adopt out or if, you know, all the animals that were coming to the farm were going to be, you know, lifelong little people that stay there.
They are. So we have to watch, you know, because you can easily get into a gray area of where you maybe cannot, you know, provide the veterinary care, which is obviously a huge expense. So we're pretty careful. We already have a few things lined up of what we need to do this year as far as rescues. And then other than that, it's going to be only on an extreme need. We already just took in four goats from the Goats of Anarchy hoarding case they worked on in New Jersey. And there's another case in Connecticut right now that I'm trying to get a hold of the Department of Agriculture. So it's a lot all the time. So we try to really be careful because everybody's out of space all the time. We all are at our max.
I mean, yeah, it sounds like with as many animals you have too, unless you have like a ton of hamsters, it sounds like you need some, I mean, and you said you have a ton of volunteers, but are you still looking for volunteers? Is that something that is an option for people?
Yes, we are always in desperate need of volunteers. As we're growing, we have multiple areas and barns. So it takes a long time in the morning and then evening time to get everybody either up or to bed. So we are, especially during the week. I mean, that's tough. Most people work Monday through Friday. So a lot of times it's just me in the morning, you know, getting everybody up, and takes a few hours. And then I have to rush out to a per diem job and then rush back. So we're always, always in need of more and more volunteers. So that's definitely something that we always need help with.
Well, yeah. I mean, and on that note, I mean, past year has been, I'm sure, a little bit different for you, although it sounds like the trains haven't stopped running. So how has the past year been for you with COVID and any and all restrictions going on?
Yeah, it was definitely difficult for the first half of the year. We were really shut down to just a core group of volunteers. Everybody stepped up. I had to take some time off of work and only work a couple of my per diem jobs. And thankfully, my job was very understanding because they know when I get hired by a new hospital, I tell them my first priority is the farm. So that's where I'm at. And they're usually pretty understanding. But we were very limited on people. So everybody worked very hard. And we just opened back up, I believe it was in November, to a more broader group of our volunteers. But we have a lot of restrictions, obviously. You can't come with any symptoms or if you've been exposed, and you have to be outside, really. And if you're inside, because we do have some small animals, you need to wear a mask and, you know, you have to be very careful. And knock on wood, we've had a few volunteers have COVID, but not anything spread through the farm. So knock on wood, and I have not gotten COVID, and I'm just so thankful because I do not have time to be sick ever. But I'm hoping this year will be better.
Well, because I see too that it looks like you, and I'm not sure if you were doing this before, but you have like virtual tours you were offering. Was that new as of this year?
Yeah, so we had been reached out to by another sanctuary out in California. This is how it started back in April. They were doing virtual tours and they were overloaded with requests, so they couldn't keep up. So they offered to farm out some of those tours to other sanctuaries, and we gladly jumped on board. And then that fad sort of sizzled out. So one of my other volunteers had saw on Airbnb that they offer virtual experiences. So we applied for that. It took a very long process, but we got approved. So we do offer live experiences through Airbnb or also through us privately. So that has been awesome because that has replaced, you know, the loss of income that we would have for the live in-person tours, because we still are not open to the public. I'm just not ready to go there and have that other added headache going on. And we actually are going to be starting, we just partnered with Amazon Explore also. It's also a live experience through Amazon. So we're looking forward to getting on board with them. We did just sign with them, so we're excited about that as well.
That's so interesting. What a great way to, like, because I totally understand not wanting to totally open up and be like, bring on whatever craziness is. It's like, maybe take a breath and then see how everything else goes. So with your experiences, like, what do you typically offer? That's such an interesting thing.
Yes, it's really neat. It's kind of whatever the group or one person tour wants. So usually we do, during the week, we do a lot of company tours. So it's like a company that's also virtual, and a lot of them due to COVID, they have a break in their meeting. So they all, you know, we join their meeting and we go on for half an hour and give them a live tour of the farm where they can interact and ask questions, see the animals, hear their stories. It's really cool. It's a nice break for them. And we've done happy hours where people are just having some drinks, having a great time watching the animals. We've done tons of birthday parties. We've done weddings. I mean, you name it. And it's all over the world. So it's really awesome as well, because we would never meet these people otherwise. And just being on Airbnb has opened up a whole new audience, because these people might not be searching farm sanctuaries on social media. You know, they would never find us. So just having that on Airbnb, and then now I know the same thing will happen with Amazon, is just giving us a whole new selection of people to meet and hopefully help support the farm and the mission.
I mean, absolutely. That's such a great avenue that you're going down. And I mean, who wouldn't want like a break in their day to like learn like the background behind some pigs or something? That sounds amazing. So wonderful. So then looking into this year, I mean, I know you said you're going to try and hold back on taking in any cases that aren't super extreme, but I'm wondering if you have some goals for this year that you're really like hyper-focused on.
Sure. I mean, every Easter, no matter what, we always rescue sheep. Just, I've been doing it for, this will be the fourth year. So we will be going to an auction on Palm Sunday. We usually try to rescue a mom and her baby, so they can live their lives out together. So that's something we're doing. I just completely try to live by never having two of any species. I would like to have at least three. You know, if something happens to another one, the other one is left alone, and it's just devastating. So we only have two mini horses. We have full size horses, but we only have two minis that live with each other. And I have two other sanctuary founders that I talk to all the time, and they're just like, Marla, you're not living by your law of three. So we do have a plan to go to the horse auction next month together, so that I can rescue some other minis that, you know, we usually try to pick out anybody that's in really rough shape to try to give them some good years of their lives. So we are planning that. And I'm searching for a chinchilla, because our male is alone, and this is why I hate to have only two animals. One of our boys passed away recently, so I have been searching. There are none in this area, which is crazy to me, but there are on the other side of the country. So I've been working with Pilots and Paws. I don't know if you guys know about them. They're an awesome organization. So just trying to arrange a flight for some chinchillas in Arkansas that need a home. So I'm hoping that will come through. We have used them before for tortoise recently and getting back into reptiles. I was very happy to see some tortoises in need because I grew up with them. So I was very excited about that. Our biggest project right now is we're building a small animal center. I actually just did a post on it today. So that small animal center is going to house our chinchillas and our guinea pigs and have rooms built for them so there's no more cages. And the tortoises, for when it's not nice out, and they, you know, when it's nice out, they can live outside. But most of the year, they do need a big area indoors. So very excited about the small animal center. So that is a huge, huge goal for us, along with a few other large projects.
I'm actually wondering, so it sounds like you have so many different animals. Is there an animal that you've yet to bring on or to rescue yet that you're trying to, or you're looking forward to rescuing in the future? Or kind of have you kind of done it all?
In the future, and I mean in a year or two or maybe three, cows. We're not set up for them. I mean, we are set up for them if we really needed to, but we don't have a pasture dedicated for cows. So really, I will eventually, but I want to be able to set a pasture up, which means clearing and growing grass. That takes a little while. So in the future, we will. Everything else, I think, aside from llamas and alpacas, which we could easily take in and house, it's just I don't really go looking. Unless like in the chinchilla incident, I'm looking, but I don't really look for a new species until someone has somebody in need. And we usually typically will wait and say, I'll say to someone, if you cannot find anybody else and you're totally stuck, let me know. Because I prefer to really wait for the dire situation.
I mean, it sounds like so many have found you at this point. Like, it's kind of startling, like, how small you've gone. Like, you have, like, these larger animals, but then coming all the way down to, like, chinchillas and, like, these, like, little critters and even reptiles. I mean, I feel like that is an underrepresented, well, maybe it's, like, a special niche, but it seems underrepresented in the rescue community. And certainly, I mean, you can imagine there are quite a few of those reptiles in need.
Yeah. I mean, reptiles, people think they're cool. They're small. They're cute when they're little, but they can grow very large and become unmanageable for your average person. I obviously grew up with so many different kinds of reptiles and amphibians that nothing bothers me. So I'm happy to give them a good home. And I'm hoping to eventually, at some point in the next few years, build a reptile house. That would be an awesome goal for the farm. And we do have even lab rats that were released from a lab from testing. They're so interesting and so smart and curious. It's been wonderful. I had rats as pets when I was a young child, so I was used to them. But it's just so nice to give them a home too. And we do have sugar gliders, which are unfortunately an exotic pet that no one should ever get as a pet. But we have three boys who have a whole room to themselves, so they're able to glide, and we'll be building them an even bigger room in the new small animal center. So we're excited about that.
Oh my gosh, what like unique animals. That's incredible. It is heartbreaking to know that like some of these, they really shouldn't probably be kept in homes, and you know, they probably, those homes probably came to that realization too late.
Right.
So, but it's so wonderful that you've been able to step in and help support them. But it sounds like you have so many personalities on this farm. I'm wondering if you have some favorites.
I don't know that I have favorites, just because I love everybody. They have their own, you know, little personalities and funny things they do and annoying things that some of them may do, you know, like big goats to try to knock you over and that kind of thing. But I mean, I have people talk about having a heart horse. I have a heart goat. Patrick is his name. And I rescued him years ago. I think it's going to be his 4-year anniversary this summer. He was at the auction and he was just standing, staring at the wall, shaking, and his pupils were completely dilated, which is so abnormal for a goat. And he was terrified. And I was just there with my 4-door like sedan car, not planning on rescuing a 150-pound goat, and I could not leave him there. So he was there with Petal, who came from the same farm with him. And she was just standing underneath him because she's tiny. So I took the both of them home in my back seat, and they're amazing. Patrick is our oldest goat. We think about 15. He's had a ton of health problems. He's the one that was on the TPN, on the IV pump. But he just keeps thriving, and we've built him his own area with just petals. So it's a really mellow area. And we've just been through so much together that I just love him. And I, you know, he's older, so I'm going to be faced with something terrible, and I'm not ready, ever going to be ready for that. But and he's just such a sweet boy. I mean, he literally will just come up to you and give you a kiss. Probably Patrick.
And I love that name too. Like I'm such a sucker for like people names for animals. I think it's so fun. It's so wonderful. Well, I mean, it sounds so amazing. And now with your family too, do they come and work at the farm as well? Like, do you have children?
Yep. I have two daughters, 17 and 22. They come and help out basically when I don't have enough volunteers signed up. That's where they fill in. But it's going to be tough because one is moving in with her boyfriend and finishing school, and the other is going off to college. So this will be an interesting summer because they'll be gone. and they've been my backup for years. My husband owns a small business, so he's extremely busy. He'll come if I need something major that like I need a strong man for. But I mean, he works 7 days a week. So we're both so busy. So it'll be hard when my daughters go, for sure, because they can do everything I can do. I mean, I have a lot of volunteers that can help out, but they can't necessarily do everything that I can do. So my daughters, because they've grown up with a lot of years with farm animals now at this point, they're very good and know how to handle them.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like you really need those volunteers then. So everyone.
I do.
Right. PSA.
I know. Well, no, I mean, it sounds like you're doing so, so much. And I love this special, very unique farm mission that it seems like you've taken on. Because certainly, I mean, we all picture like the typical like chickens and things, but like sugar gliders and tortoises are a little bit different. I'm wondering, for people who are really just getting started, given that you have like a little bit of footing since you did kind of get your start around 2017 and you've been going for a bit here, I'm wondering if you had advice for like one and two people operations that are really just getting started in the world of rescue, whether it be farm or otherwise. Did you have any advice? If you could talk to maybe yourself in 2017.
Sure. I guess I would say go volunteer at a rescue in all kinds of weather, on holidays, on days you don't feel like getting out of bed, get up and go, because there's not a day where I can say, oh, you know what? I don't feel good today. I'm not going to get up. I can't do that. So, and you have to be one of those people that is okay with having little to no downtime. I have that personality. You know, I have two master's degrees, so I was always over the top with everything I did. So for me, I'm always have this personality of I'm always taking on a lot, but I get a lot of requests saying like, oh, I really just want to hang out with animals all day. And how can I start this? And I really try to explain to people, it's not just hang out with animals all day, because you're going to have to work, because donations aren't going to pay your bills, and they may not pay the rescue's bills unless you're lucky. You know, I have my own set of bills that I have to work to pay for. I don't get paid by the rescue. The rescue fortunately survives on donations, but that was not always the case. We had to build up to that and work extremely hard. And I have awesome people to help me fundraise. But still, I mean, if you see, we're posting almost every day asking for money. So you have to be aware that that's going to be part of your life. A huge part of your life is the behind the scenes, the stuff that's not exactly fun, you know, asking for money daily and trying to figure out how you're going to buy all this food for all these animals, and that you're not going to go on vacation anymore. My husband and I go away one night a year, once. That's it. Because that's really all that's realistic. So you have to be okay with not, you know, giving up traveling. Your relationships with people that are outside of the farm or the rescue will definitely suffer. I don't have any friends that are not farm related because I don't have time. And if they're not going to come visit me on site, I just literally do not have time. So you'll have a lot of that kind of things sort of suffer. And it is tough on a family life also, because, you know, my family might want me to come home early and then I end up not being able to. So it is definitely hard, and you have to be willing to sacrifice basically any kind of normal life. I'm okay with it. I would not change it, but I think a lot of people don't realize the dedication and the sacrifice.
Absolutely. I mean, all that to be said, though, I think you have an amazing legacy that you're telling currently. And I mean, even feeding into all of your volunteers, I'm sure their lives are forever changed for it. So wonderful. We always like to ask too, and I know it feels like a silly question, but do you have any personal pets?
I do. I have 4 dogs, little dogs at home that I've had. I've got them all as puppies. I bought them. I knew nothing. I didn't pay attention to rescuing animals back at this time. Many people, I'm just like, oh, I want this Chihuahua puppy. And that's what I did. I went and bought it. Of course, now I'm completely understand everything and my ways are completely different. But yeah, no, I have 1 Chihuahua and 3 Chinese Crested. My youngest is 12. I've had them all since they were puppies. So they're all getting up there in age, but doing well. And I have made the decision not to get any more animals at home just because I am here all the time on the farm. And they're older, so they kind of snooze a lot and go outside and are in backyard. And they're not, you know, but if I had a younger dog at home, that obviously would not be fair. Yeah, so I do. 4.
You know, I love what you just said too, because like, I know for myself too, like when I was younger, like my family like bought from a breeder. And so I think the whole mentality too of like, everyone is this pristine rescuer or like this pristine human being that's never done anything against their current mission is very silly, because everyone's on a learning curve here. And certainly I know you would never probably buy from a pet store otherwise now. And I mean, certainly I'm the same way, where like now one person mentions a breeder to me and I'm like, boy, do I have some information for you. But yeah, I love what you're saying there. Also love that you have Chinese Crested.
Yes, I love them. They're an amazing, amazing breed. If I was going to be home more, I would adopt old Chinese Crested. So they're such lovable little dogs. They just want to literally be right next to you and follow you around. They're so sweet. They have amazing personalities. Actually, all of mine have the same dad. So I love them. They're wonderful dogs for anybody that's looking for a very close companion dog. And I do see them out there needing homes and being abandoned at shelter stuff. So they are available and they're just so sweet. I can't say enough about that breed. And Chihuahuas, I mean, everybody loves Chihuahuas. They're cranky, but they're really loyal. And I think that's an important thing to point out, is I was just like everybody else. I eat meat. I ate dairy most of my life. I didn't think about it. I was selectively seeing what I wanted to, even though probably in the back of my mind, I knew, and I still chose to ignore it, just like many people do. They don't want to look. They don't want to see it. And I get it. I did it for most of my life. And I bought animals and from pet stores and breeders. And, you know, now I've just learned a lot. And a year from now, I'll have learned a lot more and do something else really differently. So you can always grow. And I never like to put anybody down for their choices, because we're always going to still learn.
Well, so we do have some kind of fun questions. So they can apply to, I know it sounds like your pups at home are just like snoozing away all the time and just like kicking back. But so if you have any farm animals too that come to mind that have like maybe a bigger personality that applies, feel free to fill them in accordingly. But if one of your animals were president, what would be the first thing they did?
I think Petunia, one of my big, large farm pigs. I could see her being president. She's like royalty, because a couple times she's gotten out of her pen. And she's just saunters around, like she doesn't run away. She just literally took a tour of like the 20 acres and just visited every area, like just saying hi to everybody. And I just walked with her, because you can't make a 700-pound pig do anything. So I just went along with her. And I think she would just she likes to keep the peace. I think she would have everybody try to get everybody to be more peaceful, and she would love to have endless supplies of snacks. She loves like any kind of human snack, like peanut butter sandwiches are her favorite. So she would probably ask for that every night for dinner.
Oh my gosh, that is so cute. Picturing like, I'm just picturing with like the crust cut off or something.
So I gotta find this video. We took a video of Petunia when she got out one day. Hilarious. I'll tag you guys in it.
Oh my gosh, please do. Okay, so our next question, I'm always curious, is there like another animal welfare group you've kind of got a crush on, or you like dig what they're doing?
I have a couple or few very good friends that I've made, founders. And they've become very good friends. And it's so important for us as founders to connect with other founders, because, you know, our volunteers are great friends, and that's wonderful. But it's hard for anybody to understand really what we go through on a daily basis, the amount of emotion, the ups and downs, the constant losses. I mean, I have a lot of animals. So more, you know, I have to deal with death on a really high level, and just the grind of trying to balance the work and home life and farm rescue. So I absolutely love Caitlin from Rancho Relaxo. She's one of my very, very good friends, as well as Ashley from Twist of Fate and Leanne from Ghost of Anarchy. Those three women have helped me immensely, just even by listening, checking in, saying, are you okay? You know, that means a lot. So I love those three organizations, what they stand for, and the women behind.
I mean, certainly, like you said, you're like, if it doesn't involve the rescue, I probably won't be seeing you or spending a lot of time with you. But I'm sure it works the other way around too. It's like, since they're so ingrained in everything that you're doing, you probably are. Those are some really amazing, strong friendships. And it's so wonderful that as founders, you can all come together to do such amazing things. That's what a great group. I feel like that we should like start like a group of, because I think everyone could use that. Certainly.
So we're very, very fortunate to have each other.
I love that. It's so wonderful. So our last question is a little bit harder. So if you had to pick one life motto, what would it be?
I think just veganism, because that encompasses every reason why I'm doing what I'm doing. And it encompasses all the being kind to animals, all of that. So, because that's really why I'm doing what I'm doing, is to be kind to animals, show their stories. And veganism is one very powerful word that encompasses all of that.
That's so true. And I love what you said too about how it's not just, it's animals, of course, but then there's the environment and there's so many other reasons too. So it's like, there's a reason for everyone. Well, this was so wonderful. Thanks for carving a little time out of your day. I know you probably have a ton of animals that are like knocking on your door right now. Like, excuse me, snack time. So thank you so much.
Thank you both. I appreciate your time as well.
Marla has such a wonderful message, and we're so glad we were able to be part of the conversation today in regards to veganism, running a farm, and all those big and small creatures. They have so many personalities. So if you want to learn a little bit more about them, you can check our show notes or you can check our blog at cuddly.com.
And as always, remember to rate, like, and subscribe to this podcast. And be sure to follow Cuddly on all social media accounts at We Love Cuddly. That's C-U-D-D-L-Y. Thanks, guys.